This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
You're on the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. My name's Russ Masterton. Fiona is careering around country Victoria. Knowing Fee, she'll be drinking wine at 25 wineries before she heads back to Melbourne for the huge Midsummer Pride March tomorrow. And Joy's going to be marching in that. So do come down and say hello. Today's special guest is Ergen from Sook Restaurant in the city. Hello, Ergen. How are you? Welcome to the Escape Hour.
Hello, Russ. First of all, thank you for inviting me to come on the show today.
It's great having you on. Now, so you have opened up a recently new addition to the Melbourne restaurant scene. You've been up and running for 10 months now, and the restaurant is Sook. And why Sook, and why open in the city? It sounds like a fantastic restaurant, so I'd love to hear more about it.
Sure. So hospitality is all I know. Since 17 years old, I started off going in to help my uncle at a restaurant that he was working up in Kew. And I started off in the bar, and at the same time he was actually renovating his restaurant that he had bought in Elwood. And it wasn't until that particular venue that my uncle opened up in Elwood that I really basically got my put my training wheels on and started learning the hospitality from the ground up, literally from the ground up, because when we bought it, it was an old pizza shop that was hadn't operated for 5 years. So you can just imagine all the build up of
slime.
Exactly.
What did you cook there?
Well, that was actually one of Melbourne's first modern contemporary Turkish restaurants.
Ah, okay.
So we were there from 2003 till 2006.
So your background's Turkish, isn't it?
My background's Turkish, yes. From then on, my uncle bought a venue called Arabesque in Elstonwick, just off Glen Huntly Road. That was in 2011, 1st of July. And it wasn't until Arabesque that I actually fell in love with Middle Eastern food.
Right.
You know, although Turkish food, Middle Eastern food, same region of the world, similar spices, similar cooking techniques, but in a way, a little bit of a mountain of difference, and it wasn't, I guess, just knowing one type of cuisine, which Turkish is a slightly kind of more narrow and more specific type of food, and Arabesque being a wider range of countries where we had dishes from Kuwait, dishes from Jordan, from Palestine.
Wow.
So it was, it just kind of ignited my passion for Middle Eastern food. And I had to kind of go back to the drawing board and really look at what Middle Eastern food was, the different cooking techniques, different spices, I guess.
So that's all from, so we're talking about a region which is really Arabia, North Africa, Turkey,
correct.
All of those countries in those regions are really the, what you would term as spectacular Middle Eastern cuisine.
That's correct. That's correct, Russ. Turkey's a very, it's geographically situated, and it's the gateway between Asia and Europe. So even some of the traditional Turkish dishes that you'll find today in what we've got on our menu currently as well, one of them being called manta. Manta is Turkish dumplings.
Oh, I love dumplings. Wow.
They're almost a in between a dumpling, sizing wise I'm saying, and a small ravioli. So
nice.
That's a traditional Turkish dish, but that was actually inspired, well, it was brought into the Ottoman kitchens through spice merchants and traders that were coming from Central Asia and travelling to Arabia.
Uh-huh.
But what was happening is the dumplings were originally vegetarian in Central Asia, and at that time, the from Genghis Khan's era, what was happening is they'll go, let's say, to Central Asia, and they'll have all these lovely dishes that they've never seen or tasted before, and then they'll come back to Arabia and kind of add their own little, you know,
spices and meats.
Exactly,
and, yeah,
exactly. And being in the Middle East or Anatolia or Asia Minor, then there is a lot more cattle, a lot more sheep than there was in Central Asia. So they said, "Oh, this is a fantastic dish, but what about if we made it a meat version of it?" So, yeah. So that something that they got an inspiration from the Asians, and that they made it their own, and it's what we serve in our venue and even at my home today. So,
and it's called manta.
Manta.
Manta.
Yeah. Okay. So that one you'll find not so much in Middle Eastern, I'm talking like traditional sort of Lebanese or going down towards Morocco or something, but I'm talking more so in the Persian side of the Middle East, so that's Iran and Afghanistan and that side. So, and they're all sort of neighbouring countries of Turkey.
Fantastic. Yeah. And what would you, so you've based your whole menu around this Middle Eastern cuisine.
That's
right. What would your top five dishes be, and maybe talk about them a little bit would be great.
Yeah, sure. So when Vlad, my business partner, Vlad and myself, when we sat down and this was probably in my, I'll say last, the whole project was 1 year in the making. So, and this is everything from doing research into different regions of the Middle East that I was even though I was managing a Middle Eastern restaurant, but there are your typical Middle Eastern countries that you do kind of hear about and taste their foods, which is Egypt, Lebanon, Israel, Palestine, Turkey, and then there are the not so familiar parts of, well, I'm talking about cooking and kitchen, parts of the Middle East that maybe like Kuwait, Jordan, Oman, Algeria, and different parts of Morocco as well. So it's very interesting that, you know, from even just going from Turkey down the Middle East to North Africa, how it's all the flavors are sort of tied in together, but you know, you can see different, you know, if you go up to Turkey, you do have that sweet and savoury with the pomegranate molasses getting used in a lot of the pastry dishes. So, and the more sort of south you go, the more they make it a bit more stew-like. So
right.
in Morocco, as what you see, it's got a lot more tagine, so everything
yes.
gets diced up. Whether it's protein or whether it's the vegetables, they get thrown into a pot and just leave it
stewed up.
Yeah, stewed up. Yep. They'll, you know, on the way to where, you know, on their way to whether they're a shepherd or a goat herder or something, they'll put it on the fire in the morning, and then by the time they come back home, everything's nice, succulent, and well cooked. So
no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, with all the Bedouins there. Yeah,
that's correct. So when Vlad and I were researching different parts of the Middle East, we looked into. You know, we wanted the menu to be very playful and very fun. We wanted to do it all within we wanted to keep in mind that there are, we wanted to break the boundaries but not disrespect the region of the world that we were, you know, or the country's food that we're cooking. We still wanted to, we owed that respect to that country, and didn't want to sort of totally kind of change it away from its originality. Now it's lost its identity.
Yep.
You know, so some of the dishes, I'll say probably top five. One of them would be munta. I'll say that's probably top three of the most popular dishes on our menu. Now, just say, talking about the playfulness of the menu before, we've got a dish called the KFC, which is the Kuwaiti fried chicken. That's probably
it's not Colonel Sanders, is it?
Nah, definitely not. Well, we
Kuwaiti fried chicken. Wow.
That, yeah. We said, move over, Colonel. There's a
new kid on the block.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So yeah, that's the tip, that's the playful aspect of it. Now it's a lot of the venues that you would dine at, whether they're Asian venues, even like Mr. Miyagi, they have their own Miyagi fried chicken. You know, it's like you wouldn't probably eat that in a traditional sort of Korean or Asian restaurant back, you know, in Korea or Japan, but. In Melbourne, it's all about, I think, the new age. Both diners are really well educated. Everyone really looks. They would. They really sort of. They really. It's not like, let's say, maybe 10 years ago, even as close as 10 years ago, where you'll just kind of go to a restaurant just to fill up, you know, or just to get full. People actually, you know. And hence why there's so many bloggers and so many reviewers these days. You know, we just have, you know, we've got the we had a suggestion when we were first designing the menu about maybe doing a our own take on, let's say, you know, certain other venues in Melbourne, let's say the Chin Chins, the Lucy Lou's and Super Normals, which they've definitely have their own take from using the same flavors from that part of the world but doing it in a Melbourne manner. So
and that's what you guys have done.
That's correct. Yep. That's correct. And I think we're in the most we're in the probably food capital of the world. There is no other country in the entire world where you can walk down one laneway and have Mexican, have Asian, have Middle Eastern, funky Italian. So, yeah, it's we're very lucky, very fortunate, and the KFC is just one of those dishes that we, you know, just thought that, you know, it'll be fun, and exactly what, you know, what you, when you had a little giggle about it, is what pretty much everyone that reads their menu. Yeah, and that's all the way through from our.
So it really sounds to me you guys have just got together and said, okay, we're going to go with our passion here. We've got this passion for Middle Eastern food.
Correct.
We but we want our restaurant to be fun, and we want everyone to have a good time when they arrive and enjoy some great food. Yeah.
Correct. Yes. Now what we've done is we've designed the venue in a way that it does have both a bar feel and also a restaurant feel. So we didn't want to sort of make it a venue that you'll come, eat, and then move on to the next, you know, after dinner entertainment, whatever it may be, a bar or you know, somewhere a bit more sort of loungy or something. So. We've kept that in mind, and when we were designing the venue, we said to our designers specifically, look, we do want to have inspirations from that part of the world. What we don't want to be have anything, nothing political, nothing religious. We're just basically bringing out fantastic flavors and dishes from that part of the world and serving it in a 2017-2018 Melbourne manner. So, and in saying that, we've got things that when you would say a Middle Eastern venue, you'll think typical Persian rugs hanging off the ceiling, or you'll...
You don't have the belly dancer coming in, do you?
No. But if you offer my business partner...
Enough money, he'll do it.
Enough money, he'll...
That's right. I'm sure I could get a bunch of people to come and see that.
you'll as you walk up the laneway, you'll be greeted with a big 2-metre... bright fluoro pink neons. So, and which you don't expect. And our logo is actually back to front, because in Hebrew and in Arabic you read from right to left. So we've kept that through our branding as well. So as you enter into the venue, we've got on one of the walls the taxi lights, which we actually thought the taxi lights in, let's say, Morocco in Arabic, but as we researched into it, they just writes taxi on there. But in Morocco is a country like Cuba where it's stuck in like the 60s 70s, so right. They're still driving around in like the 1972 diesel Mercs, and in a beige colour with the taxi signs on top. So yeah, we've got one of our wall features with the light up taxi lights, and just across the venue, we've got some street art and graffiti from various artists as well.
Great.
But yeah, so it's like a Arabian fairyland, but done in a playful way. So
I love it.
I've missed my favorite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry, our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Well, this is Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Hour with Russ Masterton. Fiona Brooke is away, having a lovely Saturday in the country. We have a show today all about Turkey and Turkish food. If you would like to message in and ask myself or Ergen any questions about travel to Turkey or Turkish cuisine, you can certainly do so. You can SMS us in 0427 Joy 949. That's 0427 Joy 949. You can ring us and speak to Neil at the front desk, 1300 Joy 949, 1300 569 949. Or if you'd like to send us in an email, onair@joy.org.au, and we can answer your questions about travel to Turkey and Turkish cuisine. Ergen, you're from Turkey, so how many times have you been there?
I've been a couple of times as a kid, and a couple of times in the recent years. It wasn't until I did a proper trip. My wife is actually my mother-in-law's from the Philippines, and my father-in-law's Palestinian. So wow. She actually hadn't been to Turkey before. So just before our wedding, we went up. We went up for a month, and yeah, just kind of opened up her eyes as well. I think, just going back to, certain countries in the Middle East, or the whole region of Middle East, everyone has a certain a certain view on it, being, Muslim country and not so sort of open to, the Western world. But there's countries like, let's say, Turkey and even Lebanon, which it's nightlife and restaurant scene and dining scene and bar scene. It's a thriving, part of the country.
It's interesting you say that, because I know in travel itself, we often get asked this very question, to go to all of these destinations, and realistically speaking, I mean, I've been to Iran, and I've been to Egypt and Jordan and Turkey, and love all of these destinations, and have been welcomed there every time with open arms, and absolutely loved every minute of my time in these places. One place I haven't been to is Lebanon. Have you been?
I haven't, but with Vlad and myself, we're planning on Vlad, actually, my business partner, he's never been to Turkey or any parts of the Middle East. And,
so you're going to take him there?
We're going to take him, because I just said to him, sometimes diners will ask, which part of Turkey are you from, to Vlad? And Vlad's actually, his background's actually Serbian.
Oh, is he?
And,
okay.
And so he'll say he's never been before, and they'll just kind of giggle and say, you're running a Middle East Eastern Turkish venue, and you know, it's just ironic that he hasn't been before. But yeah, we're going to change that, and we're going to go to do a Middle Eastern and North African tour. So when I say tour, not on a tour, but we're going to make our own start off from Turkey and make our way down through the Middle East and finish off in Morocco. So
that sounds pretty exciting to me. I know Istanbul has always blown my mind away, and I have always used that as a gateway or a stopover when I'm going to other places in the Middle East. And when you get there, and I have this thing with the Blue Mosque and Hagia Sophia, I walk into those venues and I'm instantly struck by awe as to how beautiful they are. And there's something about them that you could literally just sit there for hours and hours and watch and feel something that's going on in those spiritual venues. They're amazing.
The whole of Turkey itself is gives me personally that same feeling. Istanbul is a very vibrant city, but you know, you've got the whole, let's say, the west coast of Turkey. That you can, let's say, start off from Istanbul, you know, visit the Blue Mosques and the Hagia Sophia, which is actually in the Byzantine Empire times, that was actually a church and their headquarters. So it was later on turned into the Ottoman, under the Ottoman rule, into a mosque. So, but even if you start from Istanbul and work your way down south, you'll go past Troy, where the Trojan horse is.
That's right.
And which is actually not too far from Gallipoli. There's Gallipoli itself.
Have you been to Gallipoli?
I have.
And now, did you find that moving from an Australian perspective?
100%. Yeah. I think whichever part of the world you are from, just visiting that place and just the history that's there, it's just, it really, really, really, really does move you. And you do get this very kind of, I don't know, it's like a different feeling. As soon as you enter in and not even going to where the trenches and all the where the touristic sort of, the
area is.
But it's just a moving city. Just it's fascinating, and then you'll move down towards Ephesus. There's a lot of
huge Roman ruins, right?
A lot.
History, yeah.
That's correct. And so there's Ephesus there. There's Cappadocia, which is the underground hidden city.
Have you stayed in a cave hotel there?
No, it's on my to-do list. The cave hotel and also the balloon. I want to jump into the hot air balloons there.
That looks amazing.
Whoever I've spoken to, they said you haven't visited Cappadocia
until you've seen it from the sky.
Exactly. But I did go down into the caves, and it's just fascinating how people are still living in those caves, and they've got their own, you know, ventilation systems. They've got their own sort of electricity and lighting systems. It's actually where Star Wars was filmed. They go through the little fairy chimneys, as what they're called.
Cool.
Yeah, Turkey's got different parts of it that, you know, in just put aside all the BS with the, you know, politics and maybe whatever else comes with it. Just as a place, it's just got so much within the one country. We did Lara and I got married, we just did a pre sort of little, what's a pre honeymoon?
Well, a pre-honeymoon, gosh. A pre-honeymoon honeymoon?
Yeah. we've got two kids now, so we'll just probably wait another year or so. The little one's only 10 months old. And we'll probably wait another year before we go back and maybe even just, you know, hire a car and stay up for, 3 weeks, just kind of, staying with our family and then moving down. Myself, my background's actually, my father's actually born in Greece, and my mum's born in Bulgaria.
Okay.
Our background and our ancestry is Turkish, but when all the exchanges happened with all the Greeks in Istanbul going back to Greece, and all the Turks in Greece had to go back to Turkey, my family just stayed there, and my grandfather went into the Greek military, and it wasn't until when the first big migration of the Greeks coming to Melbourne,
yes,
which was in the sort of that mid to late 60s,
that's right,
which my father came on the Patris, which was the big boat. They were 3 months at sea, and they came here literally like the movie, the Nick Giannopoulos' movie, The Wog Boy, with the one suitcase. It was actually, funny enough, it was actually a similar scenario. So they all nestled into Windsor and into Paran, just off Chapel Street. And but yeah, so
you're definitely a Middle Eastern boy by the sounds of it.
100%, 100%. So, yeah.
I had, there's this thing that I do every time I go to Istanbul, is have a fish sandwich by the Bosphorus. And I can't explain to people how yummy that is.
Yeah. People, see, with that, the place that you're talking about is called Eminönü, which is the suburb or the region in Istanbul. And it's not just a touristic place. Like, all the locals will eat there. It will be basically all the boats that will go out and catch the fresh fish.
Yes.
And then just dock up and for lunchtime and for dinner time, and they will just be, you know, all the locals, you know, it's, so what you see in the photos with all the boats side by side, it's not just a, you know, a touristic spot or a posing for a photo. It's actually everyday life. And the whole of Turkey and Istanbul, as what you were saying, like, it is very, it's very, very food orientated. So even it starts at like, you know, 7:30, 8 a.m. where you'll have different, from your apartments or from your house, you'll hear, you know, a guy just, you know, coming down the street with a little, you know, not a trolley, but one of those things, that like a little cart.
Yes.
And they'll be, you know, you'll have the milk guy coming, so he'll be screaming out from down the road, you know, saying that, you know, come down for your milk, come down for your milk. And then, yeah, people will just run down and grab fresh milk that is just brought from the farm. Fruit and veggie, the same. You know, you'll hear the guy just screaming out, you know, capsicum, peppers, you know, blah, blah, this much. Just like exactly how it is at the Queen Victoria Market.
That's fantastic.
And that's how it is. And I think meat's the only one that people would actually go to a butcher or something.
And buy something, for
obvious reasons. But
What's your favourite Turkish dessert? I mean, God, there's puddings that blow your mind if you're a sweet tooth. Then you've got all those Turkish delights and God knows what else. What do you love?
Yeah, look, it's no surprise why I'll say 80% of Turks are diabetic.
We've all got sweet tooths, have they?
We do. I think, you know, as you know, one of the most popular Turkish desserts being the baklava, I think, or Turkish, Greek, you know, that part of the world anyway, everyone's claims it to be their own. But like the hummus, like the baba ganoush, whoever I speak to, whether it's a Lebanese person or a Palestinian person or a Turkish person, everyone claims that the hummus is theirs. So, but look, yeah, I'll say probably my
grandfather. And for us Australians, we don't care because we just love it so much. So long as it's at a restaurant near us, we're happy. Yep.
Yeah, that's correct. My grandmother's baklava, I would say, hands down, probably the best I've ever tasted in the whole entire world.
Has she got a secret recipe? Or?
You know, up until, I think, 2 years ago, she made all of our baklava for all of our restaurants. She now trained up one of our other chefs who's taken on that, you know, she actually didn't want to teach anyone the recipe until she was actually, I think, just, you know, just got old and was, and she would even come into our, we, you know, my uncle would say, hey, come in to show the boys and to also cook it from our the restaurant kitchen, a commercial kitchen, and she refuses. She just wants to do it from her little home oven at home. But I'll say that's probably one of my favorites. Not too sweet, not too soggy, not too dry. The phyllo pastry that she uses is just a special homemade phyllo pastry. I would say, yeah, probably hands down my favorite dessert.
Sounds wonderful. So if you go to Turkey, again, do you recommend going on a, of course you can go on an escorted tour, and there are many of those. So you yourself are a young person, so would you just jump in a car and drive and go and see all of the sites on the West Coast there? Is that your idea of a good time?
Look, I think a combination of all the travel agents that are out there now, but more importantly, everything's online. Websites like TripAdvisor, you can just have a look, and I think some... most touring groups would tailor make a going on a tour, but I would I just find that those tours are very kind of a little bit rushed, and you don't really get to see the real part of that city or that part of wherever you're visiting.
So you're one of those travellers that likes to arrive, plonk yourself somewhere for a few days, and then people watch the locals.
100%.
Soak in the scene.
I don't even look at a map of wherever I am. I throw it all away. I even at the hotel room, I wouldn't look at any of the anything that's in any of the books there. I would just speak to the locals and just get amongst it all. I think they're the best tour guides. Wherever you go, whether it's South America, Asia, I think the best tour guides are the people who actually live there, and they're just the locals. And you can meet one in a bar, you can meet one, I don't know, walking on the street. But with Turkey, I would whatever gets shown in the media is going to be the media there. You know, they'll only show a certain parts of Turkey with all the politics and what's happening down there. But you know, I've got a lot of customers and diners and associates that travel down there. There's nothing apart from maybe next to the Parliament House. There's nothing else nothing dangerous, nothing like how they make it out to be. It's just everyone's goes about their everyday
daily lives.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's really the case in most of those Middle Eastern countries.
100%.
We find that people are people everywhere, like they are in the world, and they just are getting on with their everyday lives. I know our manager in the office that I work in, Mark, was in Turkey only 2 months ago and had a fabulous time, and it was very safe, and he thoroughly enjoyed it. And then in the travel agency I work in, I'm overly surprised as to how cheap it is to go to Turkey at the moment. The airfares are at a traditional low. The accommodation is so cheap, and you're getting good quality and good value for your money. And then there's all that magnificent food as well. So why wouldn't you go there?
Oh, that's correct. Now, just on that. Now, it's not a country where you just visit and it's in summer. It's beautiful in summer. You can do all the just from where Bodrum and Marmaris is, which are on the Turkish Riviera. You can just jump across to the nearest Greek island is Kos, and then there's Rhodos, which is Rhodes. You can just go on the Turkish or Greek island hopping as well. But also in saying that, even in as what you were just touching on now with the airfares being so cheap, even in the wintertime, it's got a different beauty to it. I haven't visited Turkey in a winter, but of what I've been told by colleagues of mine, including our new head chef, her name is Jansu. She's just explained it in a way that we've got basically, all the... The whole city is still alive all year round. 12 months of the year, Istanbul is just alive. It's a vibrant city, and whether it's for the food, whether it's for the culture, whether it's for the entertainment and kind of the art and all that, it's a fantastic place to visit.
One thing that our listeners should know, Turkey, perhaps seen as relatively progressive. Same-sex sexual activity was legalized in Turkey in 1858, and so homosexual activity has been legal in Turkey since that time. So a very progressive country. But obviously, we do warn all travellers to any destination in the world, not to do anything to upset the locals. But certainly, it is not a crime to be gay in Turkey, which is fantastic.
And they're very very active on that as well. In Taksim Square, which is where İstiklal Caddesi, which is the İstiklal Road, it's like a Burke Street, and where all the shops are. It's probably the main streets that's blocked off to the cars, so it's just trams that go up and down. And they had one of the biggest gay and lesbian marches there at the beginning of last year, and I think there was close to like 20,000 people that attended. It was just massive.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Exciting, we have a new Joy member. So we've got Jake from Docklands. He has become a Joy member today. Welcome to our family, Joy. Welcome to our family, Jake. We love having new members at Joy, and we thank you from the bottom of my heart for becoming a member of the Joy family. So we are nearly about to wind up another fantastic Escape Hour show. I am here with Ergen from Sook Cafe or restaurant in the city now. Ergen, you were telling me before we went to air today about an amazing offer you've got for a same-sex marriage giveaway. What's that all about?
This is actually the first time that anyone's hearing about it. We haven't announced it. We haven't put on any of our social media. We haven't started the campaign for it as yet. But we are giving away the what we know as the biggest same-sex marriage wedding just over $25,000 worth at Sook. So we've got 100 people that you can invite, food and drinks are inclusive, 5 hour over a 5 hour course. We've got also included in that a $3,000 photography package, and that starts off from not just at the venue but offsite to offsite locations and also at the venue. We've got $4,500 cinematography and videography package as well. We have four of our staff one of them that recommended it who three of them are gay, and we've got a lesbian chef who's just finished up with us, but it was actually her idea. We just thought it'll be we've got a very wide demographic, but the gay community is the gay and lesbian community is one that we definitely want to
support.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah, that's
so. Or what they should do is be watching your website and your Facebook page.
Correct. So it will be in a competition. So it will be through a competition where it's probably going to be getting announced in just over 3 weeks. So we're still putting it all together.
So that's a same-sex marriage package that Joy listeners could win.
Correct.
If they visit your website, which is
Souk Melbourne, soukmelbourne.com.au, and also give us a like on our Facebook, which is Souk Melbourne, and our Instagram, which is Souk Melbourne also.
Wow. Well, I'd probably ask you to marry me, Ergen, but you're already married, so I'd like to win that fantastic...
That
yeah, I would have to fight with your wife. We better not go there. Ergen, it's been a pleasure having you on the Escape Hour today.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.